as we get towards lower quality forages, they tend to consume more minerals and vitamins, no matter how you're supplementing it versus the earlier in the summer when hopefully we have got that green grass where they're getting those vitamins and minerals from the forage itself.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Feed Science podcast show brought to you by Y-Synetics. I am Wilmer Pacheco, and I am an associate professor in the Department of Poultry Science at Auburn University. We are dedicated to bringing you with the latest insights and discussions in the feed industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episodes. Today, I have the pleasure of having as a guest Dr. Megan Van Emmon of Montana State University. Dr. Van Emmon earned her master in ruminant nutrition from Purdue University and her PhD in ruminant nutrition from North Dakota State University. Soon after her PhD, she completed a postdoctorate at Iowa State University. And currently, Dr. Van Emmon is an extension beef cattle specialist and associate professor at Montana State University. And Dr. Van Emmon specializes in beef cattle nutrition and reproduction. Her research and outreach efforts are centered on helping producers make informed decisions about feed strategies and cattle management to enhance productivity and sustainability. Hello, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm good, Wilmer. How are you doing today?
I am doing good. How is the weather in Montana today?
Oh, well, it's not too bad. We're supposed to get some rain today, but it was 70 yesterday, so got a chance to do some outdoors things at the house, and hopefully the weather keeps warming up.
That's really good. So it was warmer in Montana than in Alabama yesterday. We had around 50 degrees yesterday.
Yeah, even here, I'm not going to complain about 50 degrees in April, so it's, hopefully it keeps warming up towards spring.
Yes, you know, like with this, I feel like in Alabama, I don't know if Montana, but the weather changes a lot. So if you don't like the weather, you just have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, well, last week it was snowing and raining and everything. And then 2 days later, 60 degrees and sunny. And at least things are starting to green up a little bit.
Excellent. Yeah, you know, in Alabama, everything is green. I was out of town last week. And it's amazing how everything changes in one week. I feel like I will need to cut the grass again this weekend.
Oh, yeah. I haven't brought out the lawnmower yet. I thought about it, but nope. As soon as you start mowing, you got to keep mowing.
Yes, yes.
Deep in the jungle, nature holds the secrets to healthier, happier chickens. Science is unlocking those secrets with Optient, the revolutionary lighting innovation for poultry farming. By mimicking nature, Optient Gradient Lighting creates a unique floor-level lighting gradient that improves feed conversion by up to 4 points, slashes energy use by 70%, and keeps flocks calm and stress-free. That means better animal welfare and a more efficient farm. Want to learn more? Optient Gradient Lighting is now available exclusively through your local Valco dealership or email optient@val-co.com today.
Well, you know, like, thank you for connecting today, Megan. And first, you know, can you tell us a bit about your current research at Montana State University and how it ties into practical strategies for beef cattle producers?
Yeah, thanks. So primarily, I focus on supplementation, not only during the winter, but during the summer months for developing those heifers, getting ready for their first breeding season, but also, you know, that cow nutrition during the winter months as we're trying to get prepared for that calving season. So that's primarily where my research in the last few years has been, but also have worked on some bull fertility work, focusing more on mineral supplementation with those bulls and how that's impacting sperm quality. And, you know, we don't think too much about the bulls once they're off their breeding season, and they just kind of have to hang out the, you know, 9-10 months out of the rest of the year. So can we do things to help improve fertility for that breeding season? And then some new research, at least the lab with Dr. Tim Del Curto and Dr. Sam Weifels that I'm a part of, we've been looking at the pulmonary arterial pressure research, as well as then focusing on some mineral bolus research and how we can maybe help those cows up in the mountains during the summer months receive those vitamins and minerals when we don't necessarily get a chance to see them every day and haul that mineral supplement to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something, you know, like summer is around the corner, and that's something that I would like to discuss, you know, during this episode. And considering the variability in summer forage quality, what key factors should cattle producers evaluate to ensure that the nutritional needs of the herds are met?
Yeah, that's a kind of a whole range of things, I guess you could say. But obviously, first being forage quality, you know, taking those forage samples and sending those off for analysis to a commercial lab. And, you know, out here in our extensive grazing systems, that's easier said than done sometimes, trying to get out into the back pastures and get that forage sample. But, you know, if you can take one, you know, once or twice a year out of each pasture, get those sent off, then we can really start to narrow down how that's going to impact our cattle nutrition. But unfortunately, you know, like I said, sometimes getting that sample is easier said than done. And so more just watching that forage change over time, because we expect that nice green grass to be high in protein, high in energy, meeting all those demands for those cattle. But then also one tool that producers can use is body condition score of those cattle during the summer and monitoring that, you know, once a month, once every couple of weeks, just to see how those cattle are faring throughout the summer as those forage quality parameters change as we, you know, head into the heat of the summer, you know, late July, August, especially here in the West, where our forages tend to senesce. Because a lot of times our forage quality is determined by June 15th in quantity for the rest of the summer based on our weather patterns. And if we receive any rain, I know I was looking at the drought map yesterday for some information, and you know, the Western U.S., I mean, I know we notoriously have those droughts every year, but you always hope that, you know, you start out the spring, kind of that April, May timeframe with good moisture, and not necessarily always the case, depending on what kind of snowfall we get. So I know at least here in Montana, our central area is sitting pretty good, but the west and east sides of the state are going to come in, at least right now, starting pretty dry. So we're going to cross our fingers and everything for that moisture here in the next month or so we can get some forage growing for the summer months.
Yeah, and let's say, you know, like when you are looking the body conditions of the herds, and you decide, okay, we need to supplement for X or Y reason, what would be your advice for delivering minerals and vitamins effectively during the summer, especially during hot and drying conditions where feed intake might fluctuate?
Yeah, that's the hard part. I mean, we have, you know, several methods we can use: loose mineral, those like lick tubs, blocks. There's all these different scenarios where we can use different management decisions to get those minerals into those cattle. But like you said, forage intake fluctuates pretty heavily during that time, and I know one of the biggest thing producers always, you know, it's minerals are always the most expensive part of the yearly feed budget for their cattle. So that's the struggle and the challenge each year. And sometimes you put it out and they eat you out of house and home with those vitamins and minerals. And then the next time you'll leave it out there for 2-3 weeks and they'll hardly touch it. And that's all based on forage quality during those summer months. So as we get towards lower quality forages, they tend to consume more minerals and vitamins, no matter how you're supplementing it versus the earlier in this summer, when hopefully we have got that green grass where they're getting those vitamins and minerals from the forage itself. So that's the hard part. And I know it's even more difficult for those that have those grazing allotments, you know, up in the forest or up in those mountains, and being able to provide that to those cows. And that's where some of our research with the mineral bolus will hopefully come in here in the future of, can we identify those boluses that are going to degrade properly within the reticulo rumen, and then get that much needed vitamin and mineral supplement to those cows directly, instead of trying to fight their way back into some of those areas and put those supplements out. So that's one of the challenges, at least we faced here in the West.
Well, you know, and the other challenge might be not only in Montana, but in other states in the United States, is like you were mentioning before, the grazing environments are changed from, you know, mountain pastures to open plains. And how does those variations impact feeding and supplementation decisions?
Yeah, and that's a good question. You know, so those, I'm going to use Montana again as kind of an example, because we have a broad range of environments. Because like we were talking about with the weather, you know, it was rainy here last week and we had some snow in the plains, you know, more plains area. But I know on the western side of the state, they were also seeing, they saw no rain and all snow. So that's one of the hardest challenges we face, I think, or producers face themselves, is if you have cattle in those different locations, you know, not everybody is supplemented the same. And we tend here in the plains to need or require more supplementation in terms for forage quality because of our lack of moisture. Whereas on the western side of some of these states, or at least here in Montana, they tend to see a little bit more moisture than we do here in the East, and that can help them have with a better forage quality later into the season. Now, you know, if we don't get the moisture anywhere in the state, that that really impacts our forage growth and quality. So I think it's just monitoring those range conditions and what that pasture is looking like. Doesn't matter what month of the year it is, and monitoring that and trying to make management decisions based off of that.
And when you are evaluating the quality of those forages from, you know, like different, let's say, regions, besides changes in the moisture content, do you also see differences in, you know, protein, fiber, and how does that should the producers also consider those nutritional variations when supplementing?
Yes, definitely. You know, as hopeful, well, I'm, like we talked about, it's starting to get green up a little bit here, and hopefully we'll get some growth. So we're talking the high moisture forage, but also because they're young forages, as they begin to grow, they're going to be high in protein and energy, still quite a bit of moisture in them though. And then as the summer progresses, they tend to increase in maturity, which increases their fiber content and their undigestible lignin content. And reduces the protein in those forages. So energy, you know, we'll see a slight reduction, but usually, at least that's the one nice thing maybe about beef cattle, is they can consume those low quality forages and still be able to digest them based on their rumen capacity and get that lower quality forage digested a little bit better. That's one of the challenges we do face and as we go through the summer. And luckily, or maybe fortunately, I guess, as we go through the summer, right, they've calved in the springtime, and that lactation demand from those calves also declines as those forages mature and that quality is reduced. So they aren't having to put quite so much of their energy into maintaining that lactation demand, because those calves are starting to consume more forage out there.
And the other thing that I will discuss is like bulls, because, you know, like I would like to pick your brain on how critical is nutrition for bull performance and fertility during the breeding season.
It's extremely critical. We want those bulls to be in good body condition. You know, we want them to be at least a 6 in body condition. So for beef cattle, it's a 1 through 9 scale. But we don't want them so overly conditioned when they go out onto these extensive grazing systems where that, you know, they really start to melt away, I'd say body condition wise, because they have to walk an extended period of time to get to those cows and do their job. So bull nutrition is extremely important. I think the biggest challenge we face is, right, they work maybe 2-3 months out of the year. And then for the rest of the year, they kind of go hang out if we're going to keep them for the next year and everything. So that's the challenge we face, is what do we do with those bulls during that 9-10 months out of the year? And I think one of the biggest critical factors is getting that breeding soundness exam prior to turning those bulls out to make sure their sperm quality is where it should be. And that can be a challenge as well, you know, getting the vet out to do that breeding soundness exam. But one of the things I always like to point out to the producers is that the sperm cycle for a bull is 60 days long. So if something occurs in that 60-day window where maybe you had them with a breeding soundness exam, and then something happens in that 60 days before you turn them out, or however soon that is, and maybe they get injured, or, you know, bulls are notorious, they fight and things like that. That could impact sperm quality after you turn them out. So, you know, just making sure that those bulls are as healthy as can be before they get turned out to really help make sure that they're doing their job and they can breed those cows as they're supposed to. Because we always talk about cow nutrition and the cows, because they carry the calf and you know, they're extremely important to the operation. But one bull that gets injured, especially if he's a dominant bull, and really pushes some of these less dominant bulls out of the way to try and breed, and if he gets injured and becomes infertile, that can really change your breeding season and your calving season then subsequently as well. So kind of got off track of nutrition there, but one of the things with bulls, though, is we don't actually have established mineral or vitamin requirements for those bulls. And so we kind of use the finishing ration for those finishing cattle requirements, as well as then some of our reproductive requirements for our cows to at least give us an idea, I guess, on how those minerals are going to impact sperm quality. But so that's one thing we kind of chatted about before we started recording, is, you know, it's one of those things you'd like to see established, but once again, you know, funding and getting those established is pretty extensive for a set of bulls. So, and then housing, you know, enough bulls in a single location, that tends to be one of the things, because they are hard on equipment and all of our gear. So just making sure those bulls, I think, is in good body condition is probably your best tool you can use for management and getting those bulls to pass their breeding soundness exams and getting them out there to do their job.
Yeah, and that was, you know, my follow-up questions, but you already answered. It's like, basically, there is not a specific vitamin and mineral supplements for bulls, basically. We still have the opportunities to continue doing research in that area, it seems like.
Yes, yeah. I think it's one of those areas that really, I would say, in the last few years has become more, I don't want to say popular, but we've seen a bigger push for bull research in the last few years, looking at sperm quality, how nutrition is impacting sperm quality, and looking even further past the breeding at soundness exam, doing more in-depth sperm analysis. As we know, the breeding soundness exam is just a pass-fail by your veterinarian. So it has, I guess what I would, pretty limited requirements to pass. So maybe doing some more in-depth work that I've worked with Dr. Tom Gary with, and his lab technician, Abby Zazeski, and looking at more of those lab in-depth tests for sperm quality using the flow cytometer and how that nutrition might impact that sperm quality. And maybe, well, the goal, I guess, in the future is to hopefully develop a more in-depth test than the pass-fail exam.
You already know that the key to a profitable operation is healthy, productive animals. This starts with the quality and safety of your production inputs. Our team of experts at Kemin are driven by curiosity to develop science-backed ingredients and solutions to help you maintain feed and water quality, improve intestinal health, optimize nutrition, and eliminate pathogens. Learn more today by diving in at kemin.com/AG.
Excellent. And, you know, like I'm no, for this particular podcast, I'm not going to ask you like the three questions because I know that you have done it. You know, this, I think, is your third time that we have you in the podcast. But just to finish up, what will be your the advice that you will give to young producers or students interested in ruminant nutrition and research?
Oh, that's a tough question. When you said you were going to ask me that, I was like, oh man, we could go into a lot of different areas for that. But, you know, as I got interested in ruminant nutrition, I, you know, grew up on a farm and worked in a swine nutrition lab as an undergraduate and realized very quickly swine were not my, going to be my area. But I think one of the big ones is get involved with the research as an undergraduate. You know, most of our faculty are looking for undergraduates to help with research. And that's kind of where my interest stemmed from, was because I, as an undergraduate, you go in and you know, I was going to be a veterinarian. And because that's all I thought you could do, I guess, at the time, you know, when you're in high school. And when I realized there was this whole area of research out there, it really, I guess it made me motivated to be, look more into that and realize that, you know, being a veterinarian isn't something that I think I want to do. And so I got involved in the swine part of research and really liked it. And I liked being able to do the lab analysis and everything. And so I think it's just ask those questions. You know, even a lot of faculty members I know, you know, even if you aren't employed, like there are days where we're always looking for an extra set of hands. You know, for us, a lot of times it's during rumen evacuation days when we're working with our cannulated animals to do in our, some of our research. And I think it kind of opens some eyes to what else is possible out there. Another thing that I always like to say is, you know, I'm originally from Indiana. I never would in my life would have thought I would have made it to Montana. You know, in when I was in high school and even undergraduate. And so I always, you know, try to explain to students that it's maybe 2, maybe 3 years out of your entire life where you can go explore a new option or a new career path. Nothing says you can't always come back home too, you know, once you've moved on. So I think that's one of the things I don't like to see them get locked into. Well, I have to do this because I'm going to do this in the future, and then kind of limit themselves. So I always say, like, look at it as an opportunity to explore something new and go somewhere else. And usually graduate students, you know, you don't talk about it too much, but is like you do receive a salary most of the time for being a graduate student and conducting research. And so, I mean, for me, it was like you get paid to do something you really enjoy to do.
Yes, and when you finish, you don't, most likely you are not going to own anything to you are not going to get any like student loans. So that's a really, yeah, it is a really good opportunity. And also, I think there are a lot of opportunities to work. I have the feeling like, you know, people that get involved in research, typically they don't have issues finding a job opportunity after they graduate.
Yeah, that's also something, you know, and I felt like coming through, I mean, I guess I landed my dream job. This is kind of what I had always wanted to do once I figured it out. You know, I feel like there is a lot of, you know, you can go into the industry, there's academia, there's a whole gamut of things that you kind of open the doors with graduate school. And at least that's what I found.
No, it's a great opportunity. Well, that concludes another episode of the Fit Science podcast show presented by Y-Synetic. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on future episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a comment. Thanks, Megan, and I hope everyone have a blessed day.
All right. Thanks, Wilmer.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10-an-hour tasks to focus on more $1,000-an-hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.